Hey, Dee.
Hey, Adam.
Do you think AI is just gonna eat the entire CX industry?
This is CX Cetera, where we explore the future of CX and a bit more.
All right. So this is a really interesting and scary question to get into, but I think we can do it justice. Dee, maybe before we start talking about AI and what it's gonna do or not do to CX, like, tell me your thoughts and feelings about AI.
My thoughts and feelings about AI. Okay. I've played around with it a lot. I love to, both at work and outside of work, create content. Obviously, we're doing a podcast together. So it's been amazing for that. But at the same time, I also think there's a bubble. I do think that the bubble will pop at some point and we will be left not without AI, but with a much more realistic, pragmatic perspective on its use, its incorporation, and the responsibility that using it, you know, with a high, like, ethical, moral standpoint, you know, all that stuff will come to the forefront. So I'm actually excited for the future of the future, because I think we'll get to a much more balanced place about it. But I do believe that it has a big role to play in our future. I don't think we'll have the option to be Luddites, let's just say.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I guess for me, it's similar. I think that there's a ton of promise in AI. I just think right now we're in a strange place in that hype cycle where, well, I guess on one hand, people have really been pinning their hopes and dreams on AI in some ways. Like, I don't know. It's difficult because it's like on one hand, I think we're massively overstating what AI can do or what AI might be able to do. It's almost like how back during the creation of the car and the creation of the airplane, people were like, oh yeah, well, of course, in X many years, we're going to have flying cars. And now we don't have flying cars, but we have really good cars and we have really good planes. So I think AI might be like that, where for many use cases, it's going to get really, really good. But to your point from earlier, there are still a lot of issues that we have to work on around the ethics of AI, around intellectual property, around privacy. And so I don't think we're completely there yet, nor do I think we're completely out of that, like, weird hype cycle plus trough of disillusionment. So AI is here to stay. It's not like some of these other things that the tech industry has gotten super hyped about, where it's really, you know, it feels a little bit more like a solution in search of a problem.
Yeah.
NFTs. Sorry, I had a...
Do you need a robotism or something?
Yeah, you know what? Like, here in Europe, we don't have access to the premium lozenges, so I'm just going to have to take some sort of, like, a Ricola or something like that.
There goes that sponsorship.
Yeah. Ricola or NFT?
Ricola. Not worried about NFT.
Okay.
Ricola
Hey, Ricola, if you're thinking of sponsoring this show, I actually love your product, so I will gladly go for it.
I think that is, yeah, I do think that it is an interesting time for us to be talking about AI, because it's going to be infused in everything we're doing for sure. Like, to what extent and, like, for which parts of everything, like, that remains to be seen. I think it's, like, moving forward in leaps and bounds, but also at the same time, people really want AI to work. We have to be very honest about this, because our industry is going through challenges financially. And so kind of pinning hopes and dreams a little bit on AI is, I think, there is an element of that for sure as an undercurrent where, like, it has to work or else. And I think what I'm hoping to do is parse between the actual amazing uses and the gains that we're going to get from it and the ridiculous, nonsensical stuff that, you know, it's just, like, overblown. And I think it's also important to understand that, like, guess who's building AI? Like, humans. And let's talk about infallibility at the source. And I think we're going to see some of the same questions come up in AI that we ask of ourselves when we collaborate.
Yeah. And of course, like, knowing that it's also prone to its own biases. It's prone to hallucination. It's not magic, right? So we can't pin all of our hopes and dreams on it. But I think we can be optimistic about how it's going to improve over time and, like, how we can really practically make use of it. And especially thinking that, like, AI is more than just ChatGPT. So maybe that would be helpful. Instead of going technology by technology, why don't we talk about the different channels that we use in CX that are really becoming more AI enabled?
Yeah.
Would that be a good way for us to go through?
I love it. Yeah, let's break it down.
Okay, so To answer this question about how AI is most commonly being used in CX, let's start with one of the most obvious ones, and I think one of the most prevalent ones that we're already seeing is the rise of the AI chatbot. Because chatbots are not new. We've had them for a while. I worked at Slack where we made a lot of use of chatbots as well that by the standards of ChatGPT today or Claude would look absolutely primitive, but at the time were completely cutting edge. And in fact, like AI support chatbots, they've been around.
I love that you said that it's something that's kind of making a comeback a little bit, because it is on the list of things I think that we would talk about today a bit retro, right? Like it's been done. We've both worked at companies where it's been used. I remember it being the most popular back in the day, like end of the aughts, early 2010s, when we were all working for companies. It could be reduced down to an infinitely scrollable sales homepage and chatbots were the main thing there. Or it was the main way that you interfaced with the company when you logged into that experience. And so I was working at a consumer tech company at the time, and that was all our support. We had one support agent. We did everything through a chatbot. It was very primitive and it was not fed by the options that we have today. We have tools like Drift, Intercom, and all of that, right? That can do a lot of the work for you. You can connect your sources of information, rich help centers, so on and so forth, that can really, and the way that it's sort of naturally answering, in very human voice, whoever's chatting with it, has just kind of come leaps and bounds from where it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, I think we're seeing high success from businesses that are essentially either building their entire business around this idea of conversational support or are pivoting to be more focused on that. Like you mentioned Drift, which, I think was probably the one of the pioneers of the more modern conversational, they're more like conversational pre-sales, right? They're more focused on marketing and sales acquisition, but Intercom kind of sits on both sides. And I'm even seeing ones now that are being built for more customer success use cases. So for instance, there's one that I've spoken to and I've seen a few businesses starting to use called Berry, like a strawberry Berry, right? Which is a more chatbot for onboarding and customer.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's amazing. Yeah. I think that this one is well-worn. Right? Relatively well-worn in the world of AI. And I think I'm loving that there's additional applications coming out for specializations like what Barry is doing so that we can continue to mature. But it's definitely a low risk way to get started with AI within an enterprise context, I think, because, it's been done. We've had maturity. We've had time to mature and we've proven its ROI without a shadow of a doubt.
So you're going to see a lot of deflection off those level one support use cases. And maybe even surprise yourself with its ability to kind of dig in and synthesize the answers to some of those deeper ones that you might not have even predicted that it can solve over time.
It's the true conversation piece of it that I'm excited about because, there's a virtual CSM use case that could be pretty cool right here, that it's not just about that initial kind of entry. Okay, here's the thing. And now we route you. Right. I think that's another thing that's important to understand about a lot of these technologies is that it's not just about feeding it a bunch of information, but it's really making sure your internal operations around routing are part of the setup. But I think when you've got all that stuff and you kind of solved for that initial support use case, now you can start doing some of the things, which is what I'm assuming Barry is kind of going down the path of being able to offer, is that true. Okay, what does a virtual CSM AI bot look like for a self-service experience? That's not going to be a straightforward. That's not going to be a where can I find a thing or hey, here's an error. It's not just pulling from help center articles, but it's now starting to do some of this second, third order level answering questions for a customer that's, I think, getting more into what we call the guidance realm, right? That I'm excited about. Because think about what we would do for the types of content that we could produce with our teams in particular, right? It just opens this whole world up.
What about chatbots for PLG, product-led growth, SMB, small and medium businesses? I'm trying to define all our terms here.
Yeah.
And you've worked more on the enterprise side. Do you see AI for chatbots working better in some of those scenarios than others?
Not necessarily in some versus others, but I think it's important to understand that when you get into enterprise, at some point you will hit diminishing returns, right? So when I think about some of my heads of support friends, they are actually, when they're talking about efficiency, like, sure, chatbot is something that is important to them, but there's a whole lot of other things that they can do to make support much more efficient, right? And I think our mutual buddy, Thibaut, we should have him on the show, actually, you know, would do that. Thibaut, for those who don't know, is like our head of support over at Miro, but like worked with Adam at Optimizely. And
great guy. Love Thibaut.
Love Thibaut. Love me some Teebs. So I think like there's a lot in somebody like Thibaut's toolkit that they're going to do to scale up their support operations, to deflect tickets, to like help the agents be more efficient in answering questions. And yeah, I think like when you're outsourcing as well, like it starts to make things a lot more efficient when onboarding agencies to help, you know, with a lot of the ticket volumes. I think they all would say, though, that at some point, like you can't come in and make the bold statement that some companies have made recently where like we implemented a chatbot and now we don't need a support team. Right. I think that's clickbait. I don't think the reality in enterprise holds up. And I think that AI is a very strong part of an ecosystem to scale things, but it cannot be your only tool.
I agree. And I think there's like a couple of things as well. Like while we're on this topic, one thing that I hear a lot of support leaders say, and in fact, I heard Thibaut say, because we were at an AI for support summit not too long ago where he was speaking and we had some other customer support leaders speaking, is that especially with the move to AI, it's more important than ever to have content that is authoritative and well-maintained. So if you're being tempted on some ways to say, oh, well, we're going to try to automate the heck out of our support teams with chatbots, and we're going to try to automate the heck out of content development by having generative AI produce all of our content, you're actually potentially running those two ships right into each other. Because if you're not trying to self-serve customers from a base of really accurate, healthy, robust content, then it's a garbage in, garbage out problem. And the AI is going to be more prone to hallucination. It's not going to have great content to draw from. And I think like if you are thinking about going down the route of having AI replace support agents, because you've heard, for instance, like a company, like I think there was like a Klarna case study recently where they were like, oh, we were able to automate like 80% of our inbound support tickets. And we're going to...
That's what I was talking about too. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to call them out because like they're very public about that case study. And it's one that a lot of people are looking at. But you have to ask yourself in that case, what were they doing before? Because level one support, for instance, like I don't know, like maybe someone from Klarna can come on the show and actually tell us how they walk through this. But for instance, there are a lot of companies who are going to be looking at that and they're going to say like, well, you know, could I automate all of my level one support? Well, the question is like, what was your starting state before you added AI?
Yeah.
Were you having individual agents pick up the phone and answer emails anytime any query came in? Did you not have any routing before that? Because like automation of level one support is a solved problem. You don't need AI for that. AI will just make that better.
Yeah. 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 And it's interesting too, because I think that the sort of a tangent, but what you made me think about is like, one, we need to make sure that like, obviously the problem that we're trying to solve on the support side is like clearly articulated, that people understand what that before and after state was. But I think when we're talking to stakeholders, it's like, there's two things that we need to be telling our CFOs. Like one, as we're trying to create efficiencies across the company, like you're actually going to need to invest in parts of the organization that you didn't realize you were going to have to invest in for AI to be an investment, right? So for example, you know, whoever runs your help center, whether that's like marketing, customer education, support, whoever it is, you probably need to look at your writers. You probably need to look at who's maintaining that content. You probably can, when you're doing your OKR planning or whatever, the debt for maintaining, as you mentioned, like some of this stuff, you can't relegate it to a later quarter. It has to happen now on a regular trip. And I think one of the...
Because that's feeding the AI.
Feeding the AI, right? And I think one of the metrics that you need to look at is that hallucination rate, right? Like when you look at these common technologies like GPT, et cetera, like they've been able to bring down that hallucination rate to like 5% on average. That's not where it started, right? And so I think that like we need to understand that if we're going to run AI for support cases, like you've got to partner with those stakeholders early to understand what roles are going to fund that investment in AI. And they may not be all in one function. Like, let's say you have, you know, like an AI group that like exists somewhere in your organization. That's a good start. but it's going to have dotted line folks coming in cross-functionally that are owning these technologies that are feeding the AI, right? So that's like one piece. And
yeah.
the measure of like, whether that's like reducing hallucination or whatever, like that also needs to be in place as like a checks and balances.
Yeah, looking at even like the accuracy rate of common queries coming into the AI from customers, you'll want to test your own searches in the case of AI search, which we'll talk about in a moment. You want to test some of the same conversations that customers are having in the case of conversational. And I do think, like, to your point, there's going to be maybe like three potential roles that we'll start to see increase as a result of this, even though the increase in these roles should be offset by being able to ultimately have smaller and trimmer support teams in the long term.
Yeah.
One, as you mentioned, is any team that's responsible for creation and maintenance of content, because garbage in, garbage out is going to become a way more important issue, especially talking about any AI that's training itself on content that your company has produced. Number two is going to be, I think, QA teams who are responsible for the QA of both existing content, as well as looking at, you know, if chatbots are actually serving answers, what is the accuracy rate of those answers? And then finally, systems teams that are ultimately responsible for maintenance and improvements of these AI technologies themselves, even if that, you know, even if it's not like an in-house thing that you've built and you're working with a vendor, it's probably the systems team that's going to own the relationship with the vendors that you're working with. There's also search, right? Search is not
mm-hmm.
going away. And in some cases, you know, we're going to see AI-based search embedded directly into technology products themselves. In other cases, we're going to see it implemented across help center, community, et cetera. But the point is, you've got these volumes of content, and already many companies have made the investment in building federated search platforms. Well, those now a lot of those federated search vendors are also adding an AI layer in there that's going to make all of that content even more discoverable and more intuitive to find. So, like, for example, we use one at Personio called that is able to take you know, kind of Q&A style questions and find content from across our help center, community, academy, et cetera. Even for our support team, it can also find internal documentation that customers don't usually have access to, and help the support agents answer it better.
Yeah, yeah. And we use Algolia, by the way. And yeah, we're definitely starting to see that across the board. And I think, like, solve for that federated search problem, which is great, because, like, that's something that typically takes, like, 6 months or something to implement, you know, and you've got, it's like this massive cross-functional, you know, initiative, and, you know, you've got to like design what that, like, you know, it's not headless or headless, so you're going to design all those things. So I think it's going to simplify this a lot. So I'm definitely, yeah, I'm definitely seeing that. But I think what's cool is, so if we're starting to talk about support Copilot, right, that's the customer facing angle. There's also the internal use case, like employees can't find anything internally either. And that's a problem when you're trying to do your job. So I'm excited about Glean as what we use internally for that sort of like united.
I was going to mention Glean too. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
AI based knowledge management internally.
Yeah. It's so cool. And it's like, and I just remember when I started in this career, like the solution was, you know, let's have a long term tiger team from across all of the functions to create an intranet. And that's how we're going to, you know, and so like, and then on the GTM side, we tend to work with large customers have intranets, and we try to get our products in the intranets so that, you know, people know, hey, you have a license, hey, you can go claim it, hey, you should start to use it, here's the training for that, here's it, you know. And so I think that that's going to kind of turn that model on its head a little bit, and I'm already having conversations with customers to figure out, you know, okay, so we use Glean, you use Glean, how do we get, you know, a big package of Miro things inside the right places, and, you know, like, so that when people ask questions, your Glean uses Miro, like, you know, obviously there's Miro as an integration, but I more mean like the implementation content, you know, that our teams can create on the CX side becoming a part of that.
Right. So like, can we put like all the materials that we're creating for your onboarding into your intranet, have your AI-based knowledge management tool consume it,
right,
so that it can actually like help onboard customers from inside the organization.
Right. And like, think of it as like a place where they get, you know, instead of having to connect with support, or instead of having to like force them to go to your website or your Academy or whatever, like how might you give customers a package where they just are using that internal search tool?
Yeah, especially for like end user training, 100%. Employees, things like that. I wonder if this is what will finally kill the question of can you export your Academy content and put it inside
our
LMS?
Because that question still happens and it's a fair one, but like, it, you know, and then people were doing these complicated things to try to build like syndication when no one's released one, no LMS has released syndication or like integrations with customer LMSs in a way that's like scalable. So is this
it? There's some out there, but it's still challenging.
They're clunky and it takes like a staff to run it. So it kind of like, for me anyways, the ones that I've used, you end up having to like take from your production resources to like support some of this stuff when like you, or like hire a specialist. And I don't know that that's clear ROI. So yeah, I'm excited about Glean. Do we want to talk a little bit about speaking of content creation, right? Like how AI can help.
Yeah, like I think we've kind of covered support Copilot. So like we talked a lot about knowledge management and helping them surface the right resources. Like I think the only thing that I would say before we go into content about support Copilots is what I'm interested to see is, you know, right now as it stands, like in a kind of pre-AI world, it's the agents who have often been around for a long time, who know the product really well, who have seen the same cases solved over and over, who have the edge, who become more senior.
Mm.
You know, like people always say, AI is not going to take your job, but a person using AI will take your job. So what I'm going to be interested to see is from a career development standpoint, do we start to see a world where new support agents are able to come into the organization, ramp quicker because they can take better advantage of AI tools to solve problems and focus their, you know, human efforts on what's more important? And will we see those people start to, you know, get to seniority and higher resolution rates and things like that?
That's such an interesting point. And even the concept of like how roles are going to change and potentially how job architecture might change, right, is such a fascinating direction because you're right. It is going to do those things. And then, you know, support agents are typically hired at like some of the, you know, earlier entry level, you know, and you don't get like principal support agents or things like that that you might another. Or, you know, parts of like CX or other parts of just your holistic organization.
Yeah, it's like typically still regarded as like more of a feeder role for other.
Other
roles, yeah.
So this is kind of an interesting way to think about how AI might actually change the job architecture of some of these roles to where like, hey, if like, again, if the goalpost is changing, right, because of AI, ..
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so like content creation, I would put two things together here. Content creation and like content adaptation, by which I mean turning content from one format to another, because that's, I think, a surprisingly like interesting use case already for AI. We talked about garbage in, garbage out a moment ago. And in that sense, like I think with content especially, like I think it's going to be hard for you and I to check our own biases here because we both are in and over teams that create and maintain content, but yeah. I'm going to try to check my bias as much as possible. You might be tempted to think, oh, well, you know, generative AI is really good right now. So can we live in a world where we just, you know, outsource like most or all of our content creation to AI?
Mm.
And I really don't think we're there. And I'm not even going to say yet.
Yeah.
Because I think even in a world where, AI is being used for more drafting or more adaptation of content or things like that, I don't yet see a way out of the garbage in, garbage out problem where someone still ultimately has to be responsible for ensuring that content being created and published is ultimately accurate.
Yeah.
Because it, right, like you don't want to get into a situation where you're creating a bunch of inaccurate content or hallucinated content, training an AI on that and then serving customers that, because ultimately that means that it's just going to come back to your support team ultimately.
Yeah. Yeah. The end of this. But like as consumers of content, is that what you want to consume? Or are you consuming content for like some of the things that humans actually do better? Like I think that AI is continuing to prove that there are some things that it can do better than humans, which is great. But I think when we shift over and kind of our day-to-day shifts over into doing the things that it can't do well, I think what we're going to find is that the value of the art that we consume actually doesn't, like, we can articulate it better now, what we find to be high value about it. And I don't think that's going to change dramatically. Another way to say that would be it's going to become its own kind of noise. And we're going to start to want to sift through the noise to find the gems. And I do think that I'm willing to place a bet when it comes to content on like personalities or, you know, like it's like things like that that create human connection that like AI is not ever going to be able to create. Right.
Yeah, I kind of I agree. But I think I want to divide this maybe into like three broad types of content, because each of them is going to operate in different ways.
Yeah.
There is marketing content,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into marketing content. But here we're talking about, like, what are we talking about? We're talking about, like, blogs and promotional videos and maybe even, like, internal assets for the sales team, one-sheeters, things like that. Like, here, AI can help with the production of those, with maybe creating outlines. But you don't necessarily want AI producing the final output, because we've all seen this flood now of really low-quality AI-generated content that sounds like it was created by AI. So even though you might want to use it for like outlines or for drafting or maybe even for like helping edit the what you have produced to sound more in line with your brand style guide, like I don't think the marketing departments who win are going to be the marketing departments who are trying to do all of this end to end purely through AI, because they're going to produce content that ultimately doesn't really have a voice, or they're going to spend longer prompt engineering that thing to sound like their brand voice than it would to just have a skilled content creator create that content.
Yeah. 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 Especially somebody who really understands all the context that you would have to provide to, you know, within your prompts to get it to generate something. Right.
Exactly. So like when that tide will turn is when AI can do that faster and with fewer steps than a human can. So here, I think it's like still going to be human first, but again, humans who know how to use AI to reduce some of those more like manual, annoying parts of producing copy. Like what can be done to get, you know, to edit copy to be in line with your brand voice? Can you brainstorm with AI? Like what topics might I want to talk about if I'm creating a video about XYZ for this audience? You know, like that's where I think we'll use it.
Yeah. And I think like, that's where it's really great, is in that early stage part of a process, right? Where it's like that first draft, where we know humans are terrible at that, right? There's that common meme of like, I just spent 10 minutes today doing something that I've been putting off for 4 years and I will learn nothing from this, right? It's like actually that like that first kind of just getting out there. It's like going to the gym. It's like stop thinking about it, just go, right? Like and mood follows action kind of thing, right? And I think that piece is where AI is great and humans are never going to be great. It's that first blip that we need to get out there, right? And that's what it's amazing for, and that's what we should use it for, but
getting
not without
on
that
the page.
Oversight. Yeah.
And then coming back at the end and helping like edit what's already there to, you know, you can even ask it questions like, hey, can you give me suggestions on how to, you know, rewrite this in like XYZ style?
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, I mean, there's entire products that have been built kind of from that starting point. Like if you look at a product like Writer, which now is trying to be a more generalized, I think it's succeeding at being a more generalized AI product, like internally at organizations where, you know, it's using a different technology than like the GPTs that we're used to when we use like ChatGPT. They're using something called graph-based RAG.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm not technical enough to explain to you, but basically it's building like a different set of associations between the concepts that it's using to train its model. So in some ways that means like less prone to hallucination, but you kind of have to like train it in a different way. But anyway, like when you're looking at something like that, you can train it on your company's style guide. You can train it with your company's internal documents, et cetera, et cetera. So it can give you something that is going to be like a little bit more accurate and on point. But again, you have to train it with the right materials. You have to have a style guide. Someone still needs to create the style guide. Like you need a human to do that. So on one hand, there's like marketing stuff, but on the other hand, like let's say there's support stuff, and I'm going to put academy and training content in the middle, but let's come to that last. With like support content, with help center content, there, like yeah, it needs to be consistent. Yeah, it needs to be accurate. You probably don't need to spend as much time getting it to have a really defined particular voice, but there you're not really aiming for like personality. It's not the human side of it that's necessarily going to win out. Like we have countless studies now at this point and countless research showing that when it comes to support, customers don't really care about delight. They care about getting an answer as quickly as possible. So there, I think like what's going to win are the products that help you produce content that is still accurate, but as quickly as possible. And again, with like fewer steps. So here I'm seeing things like, for instance, there's a product called Clueso, C-L-U-E-S-O, that you walk through the workflow that you're trying to document using a browser plugin, and it logs the steps you're taking. And from that, it'll create an article, and it'll create a walkthrough video, basically from the flow that you just produced. And then you can add, you know, you can add a voiceover if you want. You can do your own voiceover and adapt it. So, like, I think we're going to see evolutions of these tools that are going to make it simpler and easier to both create documentation, again, using human expertise, but automate all the, like, boring production parts out of that.
Yeah, yeah. And I love what you said about the delight, too, right? Because, like, it's interesting. Like, the marketing content is going to need a lot of that. But then, like, when you get later into the sort of experience with customers, support, it's too late to be delightful at them. You know, you done effed up, but now you got to fix it, and it's got to be precise. And, like, I don't have time for you to be charming. I don't need your riz. Like, let's go, right? And so I think that's, like,
I don't need your riz. Every support team should have that on a t-shirt.
Seriously. I'll talk to our buddy Tebow about that. Yeah, I think, like, a lot of this first draft stuff and some of the, like, hey, generate this, you know, the help center pieces that you talked about. Again, there's a lot of this, like, in the initial discovery phase, right? And I think that that's one thing, even just, like, to tout Miro's AI capabilities for one second, that I think are so cool is, you know, there's, like, two things that I use it for on a regular basis. First of all, like, your initial research docs or your PRDs or whatever, like, within Miro with all the context on a board, you know, our AI sidekicks is what we call them. Our agents, like, come in, read all that stuff and, like, generate that first pun, right? Like, that first draft. And I think the other thing is just, like, the synthesis piece that you're talking about, right? It's, like, taking these gobs of information and, like, actually making sense of them. So, like, you've got a big team that's brainstorming something and then, okay, like, what are the key takeaways or what were the main themes? And I think that's similar to, like, did you call it Clouseau? I haven't tried that.
Clouseau, yeah.
Yeah, can do that. And what's really interesting is when it becomes all text-based like this, now you start to see companies like Descript, I think that's how you say them, like I use them all the time, coming in and say, hey, you can edit video by just, like, we have a little AI thing in here that will look at the transcript of all of your text, and we will, or like you've uploaded your script or whatever, and we're just going to get rid of all the filler words with the click of a button. So all your ahs, all your ers, like all those things disappear. So I think that's also exciting, because who wants to be sitting there doing that kind of work?
Right. And even just being able to see, like, the first time I was ever able to edit text and have the actual audio be edited based on what I was doing in the text, that felt like absolute magic to me.
Yeah.
And again, this stuff isn't perfect, but it's meaningfully better than what you're going to get in a lot of other cases, but for way less human effort. So, like, for instance, and now I think we'll kind of get into some of the more, like, academy focused use cases too. There's some stuff there that's not going to get you all the way. Like AI isn't going to do the instructional design for you. But on the production side, we're seeing things that are already way more impressive than what we had even seen a few years ago. So, for example, like AI avatars, like I always call them Synesthesia by accident, but the company is called Synthesia.
Yeah.
And, like, localization, for instance, I've seen one called HeyGen, H-E-Y-G-E-N, that, like, you can do a lot of this AI-based localization, right? You can take someone who is speaking in English and you can translate what they're saying to German. It's the same person speaking, but it's, like, manipulating their facial features. This is a real human, right? Yeah. To make them look as if they are speaking native German. And this stuff isn't perfect. Like, sometimes it still looks a little bit like you can tell it's AI, but it's getting way less uncanny valley. And if customers are willing to accept that, and again, in many cases they are, because they don't care how, like, perfect it is, they just care about getting the information in a relatively engaging way. Like, this stuff is really useful.
Yeah, hugely useful. And I love HeyGen, by the way. Like, I've been using it a lot, and we're using it on our team. And
what do you use it for?
Yeah. So there's, like, first of all, localization. I think that's, like, an initiative we're about to use it forward. Like, you could just localize everything and we no longer have to worry about, like, staffing teams or working with, like, a centralized localization team. Like, we're still going to do, you know, the appropriate amounts of those things. But, like, now you can go, like, I can go to my fledgling upstart, you know, regional sales head and say, hey, I know I told you that I wasn't going to be able to localize everything in, you know, what's the language in Lord of the Rings? Don't use an actual
Elvish.
Elvish, like, you know, whatever. Like, I can't localize that. But guess what? Now with HeyGen, like, I don't have to make you wait until Q5 for me to, you know, like, invest in localizing an Elvish, right? We can use HeyGen to do that. And I think that's really exciting, because these are teams that, it's like cart before horse. It's like you want them to scale to a level of ARR to, you know, then you can compare, okay, should I invest in this region or this region, you know? Now you don't have to do that. You can actually give them the fuel that they need to be able to scale, as opposed to waiting until they've done. You know, it's such a weird chicken problem when it comes to having those conversations.
Well, yeah, and in a lot of cases, they're not going to say, like, I need a perfect. They're going to say, like, I need something so I can start to build a business on top of this.
They're not asking us for really hard things, but it's like the way that we have to do them now, we have to say no, and we have to be really argumentative about it because it's just, the economy just doesn't work out, right? And so now...
Right, it takes so much effort to, like, localize.
Yeah, and so I think, like, so one, I think that's, like, localize all the things is, like, a really clear way. I also can't wait to do this. I already, like, telling my CEO I'm going to do this next time he's in Austin. Come into our studio for 2 minutes talking to Hey Jen. Sign a release. Still going to make my CEO sign a release and then go away and I can use your avatar in our video content forever, right? And I think that's a really cool thing because now you don't have to, like, wait for, you know, on-sites or off-sites to have the internal talent within your organization or for someone to be available. If you, you know, you can use their little AI avatar to be able to, like, infuse, you know, maybe you're relaunching, let's say, a new academy and you want to welcome to, you know, Adam Abramescu Academy and you want, you know, I'm just going to, like, edit Adam, the AI, to say the welcome versus, like, hey, Adam, like, when are you available? Whatever. The cool thing, too, is that, like, with this type of talent, they're not great on camera, right? Like, a lot of C-levels are busy. They didn't have time to, like, sit, you know, or whatever it is. Like, you can now even have them read a script, and then you can use AI features. This one's kind of cool to, like, have, forget what they call it, but it's basically, like, eye contact is what it's called. So I'm here reading the script, but this AI is going to make me look right at you after the fact. That's freaking cool. So now
that is super cool. Yeah,
like, that's such a cool use case. And now people can do way less prep.
Yeah,
to be able to, like, be on these videos. Like, so that right there saves you so much time from a production sense, just those two things alone. And again, like, we talked about text-based editing a bit. I love that. I think it's so fluid. The filler words, the, like, text-based video editing in general. So these are the things that I'm really excited about. And I think, like, you know, whoever invents, like, reduction of double chin through AI is going to command the, like, content editing market, because, like, that's, like,
everyone's going to be like a Snapchat filter.
Seriously, you don't have to, like, you know, you don't have to, like, look good anymore. So yeah,
no, but, like, that's it. Like, I think we're already talking about here some really proven use cases. So in some ways, like, when we're talking about where to make AI investments, yeah, some people are really choosing to you know, kind of, like, use hope as a strategy, and hope is not a strategy. But there are some really already proven technologies, areas where, like, we're already seeing the ability to do things in a much different way, and they're, like, actually taking advantage of them. Well, you don't have to have hope. You can actually use tools that are available.
Yeah.
I think another one, like, that where we're already starting to see things really shape up is the localization tools themselves, right? Like, localization has been around for a while. There have been machine-assisted translation tools for a while, but now neural machine translation is starting to get meaningfully better, especially if you can train it on your own internal style guide. So, you know, like, all of the localization vendors out there, like Smartling, Phrase, Localize, add any others, right? Translated, they're all starting to take better advantage of neural machine translation so that you can localize again into more languages and continue to refine and give feedback on what's being translated. So it's feeding the translation memory so you can do more of that over time. Again, like, in a lot of cases, we're not talking about perfect, but especially if we're talking about your ability to serve a market that you might have had no access to before, now that's gotten a whole lot easier.
Gosh, that's, yeah, I think localization, just hands down to me, it's probably the least sexy sounding to a lot of folks, but from a production team angle, that has been such, it's like a bugaboo, you know, of a process. And, like, to be able to simplify that now and to be able to do all of these things, and there's mature tools out there that, like, are just benefiting continuously from, like, the you know, the progress we're making in AI. Really excited about that. You know what's interesting too, you just reminded me, actually, this podcast, it would be interesting to do an episode of this podcast through, like, notebook LLM. And here's why. Like, we're talking about all of these things that we can do from a production perspective that are, like, saving us time and that are pain in the butt. We don't want to do them. But, like, to your point from earlier, you do have to invest on another side of the business, which is, like, the scripts now need to be a lot better, right? And so, like, the content you're creating for this video has to be a lot more polished and has to be done in advance. Like, whereas today we might write a lot of things in the studio as we get in there and start to deliver, and it didn't sound the way that we thought because we didn't prep as much in advance, or the script was a little bit draftier than maybe it needed to be. needs to be a lot more polished before we get into this. But I use Notebook LLM a lot, which I love. And it has this feature that allows you to take to upload a script. And then you can actually do, with a click of a button, a podcast between two people from that script, right? And it's these like pre-loaded voices inside of Notebook LLM. But I was talking to a friend of mine just 2 days ago who works at Google, and they're already internally dogfooding the version where you like upload your own voice, or you like speak into it.
Yeah, it's super cool. I mean, even with the pre-canned voices, it's already super cool.
So cool that you can do that, right? And my colleague at work who kind of leads our AI transformation, Tomas. Hi, Tomas, if you're listening, he told me he would, but let's see if he gets this far. But, you know, he actually just was like talking to me and wasn't slacking me, and he was in a meeting, and he actually took our conversation and like turned it into this customer education like podcast between two people that I'm going to send you. It was wild. It was wild.
Okay, well, Notebook LM version of CX, et cetera, coming up. And I think maybe the only other thing that we haven't really talked about yet that I would bring up is analysis. So, you know, in CX, we do voice of customer. We process large volumes of survey data.
Yeah.
We look at large volumes of responses to help center feedback, et cetera. Well, being able to use AI to say, again, like take massive volumes of data and share insights, show me what's bubbling to the top, show me the top keywords, summarize those keywords in the language that the customers are sharing it in. This all exists and largely is pretty useful in AI tools. So I'll give you a couple of examples that I can think of. One is that with that AI tool that we're using that I told you earlier, Ask AI, they're taking all of the data about questions that customers are asking, as well as the tickets that are still making it through to our support team. So both essentially things that are being deflected as well as things that aren't being deflected,
yeah,
and are surfacing that for us in a bit of a word cloud. It's not giving us,
yeah,
you know, exact customer data, so it's still anonymized and it's still private, but we can see which questions are being asked the most,
yeah,
in our search, in product, and to our support team. So we can use that to prioritize improving existing content and making it more discoverable, or creating content where it doesn't exist yet. So I think that's super cool, and it's something that we're already taking a lot more advantage of.
Yeah.
Another one. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say like we have UniQ. We also use Gainsight AI for a lot of that synthesis. And you know, to answer the same questions you're talking about. And I think that impacts not just like, okay, how do we change our content so that like we can deflect more of these? What do we need to queue up in terms of content? But for us, you know, we do digital success. So we have all these orchestrated journeys directly within Gainsight as well. And so really understanding where those breakdown points of the journey are and then being able to like revise them in this way, I think it's going to be useful and something that like, you know, it just allows you to scale your journeys and like pinpoint where you need to go in to, you know, augment some things in a way that we couldn't before, or you were just like taking a stab at, or you needed to A-B test. I don't think you need to A-B test every single thing. There's like a point at which it's a little ridiculous to have to A-B test certain things. And I think this will help us identify when it's worth investing in testing versus like clear cut, this is a like pinpoint issue, change this there, right? And I think like the other thing that we use is tools like POCUS, and I'm excited to play around with, okay, how might we like leverage in the segments where we have digital, we also have field, like they're hybrid segments, we can leverage a lot of this technology to actually pull in field teams to pay attention to an account or to like dive in with a champion or a stakeholder when we're able to create a field alert leveraging AI. Right. And so I'm
really looking at specific signals or triggers that say like, hey, we need a human on this now.
Yeah, exactly.
Super,
and think about how
super,
that data
cool.
set like will help you refine churn prediction and things like that. Right. Like nobody, yeah. it's just next level. So I'm super excited about those things.
Well, and I think they're even thinking about cross-team collaboration, like another area where this is really helpful is, you know, product teams often have trouble ingesting all the voice of customer data that we provide.
Yep.
But now, for instance, actually being able to look at something like the data from Ask AI on the back end and actually seeing it kind of in you know, like the cold light of day, they can see what customers are struggling with the most. And that is way more consumable for our product teams to look at and take action against than some of the ways that we've provided it in the past. So that feels really promising for me from a collaboration standpoint, because then the more problems we see, we can create content around it, but also we can share that back to the product team and we can work together to also improve the product experience in those same areas. And our data team has also picked up the mantle of this. I'm excited to get my hands on this because this is brand new, but they've just created a voice of customer bot, essentially, where they're ingesting all of the the VOC data that we have, and you can essentially chat with the voice of the customer and ask it questions, which again, for some of our teams that don't have ongoing access to customers, is super cool.
I love this use case, right? Because we're always as leaders saying, you know, and I have this background in product. And so in product, you always say like, you should be talking to 3 customers a week, right? When you're not in a customer facing role. On the CX side, you know, ever since I've been in CX, it's like, you should be talking to 3 customers, not even a day, but like every 4 hours. I don't know like what ratio we would use in customer facing role. But I think this is an ultra cool use case, regardless of whether you are in a customer facing role or not, because there's so much that you cannot scale when it comes to understanding how your customers feel about your product, your onboarding process, whatever level of service you're providing, that this could help solve for. So I love that use case.
Well, we've talked now about a lot of the ways that we're using AI, ways that we've seen it used in the field, the different use cases. We even kind of talked about what we think is hype versus what is real. But now, I guess we come back to the toughest, scariest question. What does this mean for our jobs? Like, will AI replace our roles or maybe replace certain ones? Do you want to talk about that first, or do you want me to?
Well, just a couple things in the you know, just off the top of my head that I will say is the CS changes, right, because of this. So even if you just think about all of the scaled ways in which we're talking about using this, you now need to do a sliding scale and look at a CS role and be able to apply all of those things account by account, right? Or cohort by cohort if you're a scaled CSM and you have, like, let's say, a ratio of 100 accounts per CSM. But if I'm the Salesforce, if I'm like a CSM of, let's say, Salesforce or a massive company size, I need to be able to, like, look at all of this. Basically, what I'm trying to say is, like, AI has to become a part of how you synthesize account-based information, how you pinpoint and understand where your accounts are struggling, right? Like, you look at your end-user population across that journey. And I think that's part of your research, right? So that's, like, one piece. Like, you need to understand what's happening in your account in a next-level way before you have a call with the customer. And I think we talked about HeyGen earlier and kind of using it for education perspective purposes. But think about digital QBRs as a CSM, right? Like, you have access, you can partner with your data team. You understand what that QBR has to, you know, actually express to your customer in terms of like what ROI and value you drove over the last quarter. I mean, the metrics you're going to look at are pretty standard across accounts. And now you create that initial sort of shell, let's call it, of a QBR in theory. And then you can sort of swap out customer names, you can swap out the data, you can do all these various things, and it's off to the races. You don't have to force your customer to get on a call with you. In fact, the call can be about the digital QBR that you sent over and actually doing next horizon planning with that customer versus just trying to have the level of conversations we're all used to having with customers now that they do not want to have. They're telling us a million times, like, I don't want, you know, to have this conversation with you as a this QBR. Like, it's not a great use of my time. And just on the flip side, when I worked at Visa, I managed a portfolio of 29 different, what's the word I'm looking for? Platforms. Thank you. I work in SaaS, I promise. And I met them for all 29 of those. And they wanted to have a QBR with me specifically as the champion. And, you know, it came out of my budget, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's like a full-time job if I'm doing that. It's a quarter. So I can't afford to have that conversation. I wish there was a way you could scale this. And there is,
yeah. And like, I know, I think it's easy to skip from everything being manual today to like this vision of, oh, well, like in the future, QBRs are just going to be like getting your Spotify wrapped and it's going to be like completely AI generated and it's going to pull from these fields and all of that. Like, I think we'll get there, question mark. But there's meaningful steps that we can take along the way in advance of that technology existing. Like, I think we'll see like way more proofs of concept of what does a digital QBR look like and how much of that can be automated? Because again, we're not talking about automating everything the CSM does. We're talking about automating the most repetitive things that they do that don't necessarily add value. Because like, what's the valuable part of the QBR? It's not the part where the CSM provides a bunch of information to the customers. It's the discussions that it unlocks. It's
exactly.
the strategic guidance and the mutual planning that you can do afterwards.
That's why I think a lot of the like reason why people don't want to try some of these tools is because they're like, well, let's wait until it gets there. Actually, no, it's already there. Like, augment sort of what you're using it for as it gets better and better, but start using it now and then keep up with it as it gets better and better so that you can sort of, you know, shift and parry and stuff like that around it. And that's how the roles need to evolve. It's not a clear cut answer of like, this is what's going to change about your role and you must do it this way. Because It's like, it's what they used to say about walking out of a store with a computer back in the day, right? It's like obsolete, it's out of date.
So, dude, you're getting a Dell?
Yeah, like, it's the same thing with AI. It's like, okay, I'm going to use this AI to do this part of my job, and then I'm going to do this part. The moment I'm done with that sentence, actually, use AI for more of it, you know? So it's got to be...
Yeah, right. You create something, and then you got to maintain it. It's actually just like content in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I agree. And I think that like, actually, I'm thinking about we were going into our annual planning for my team at Personio. And one of the concepts that we kept coming back to is, and you know, this is nothing new, but it was a good framework for us to use, is that often we are trying to go from having nothing to having something great. And if we can't get to something great, we say, okay, well, then we're not going to invest in it. So what we started to look at is, well, where can we go from nothing to something and then from something to something great? And let's be really choosy about what we really want to put in the effort to make great. Whereas like sometimes going from nothing to something is already enough, or is the thing that it's going to unblock us from being able to do something great down the road. So what you said a moment ago really, really resonates with me.
I love, by the way, this framework that you just gave, because most people start at the, let's just go from something to nothing and then we'll iterate. And sometimes that's an excuse for putting out shoddy work. So I love that you have a second category of like something to something great.
Yeah. And you like choose where you want to invest in something great. And that shouldn't be everything.
Yeah. Don't just worship the 0 to 1. You do need to look at 1 to 2.
You do. Well, your 1 to 2 are going to be your differentiators. Like, where are the areas that you really either, this is the most meaningful problem to solve, so you want to put extra firepower against it.
Yeah.
Or it's the area where you want to be proactive and differentiate, because most iconic programs out there, they're not doing everything great. They're doing like 1 or 2 things really great.
Yeah.
And they chose those for a reason.
Yeah.
All CX teams are going to be challenged to work more efficiently. So we're going to see the growth of these systems and ops teams who are going to build infrastructure using AI with less headcount growth. We're going to see teams challenged to produce content efficiently, but like teams that produce content will still produce content. I think we might even see community teams that are focused on connecting people face to face and building those personal relationships start to become more of a premium for CX, right? Because you can't actually automate communities that well. You can't automate relationships. I think where we're going to see those teams continue to be resources, like A, using AI, where can we still get from nothing to something? But B, like, what are some of those areas that truly will become differentiators for the customer experience? And a lot of those will either become relationship oriented, or kind of what you talked about earlier, building either like content, resources, programs that really do differentiate the customer experience, because like it's more opinionated, because it has more of a point of view, because it's going to help the customer do something besides just like, yeah, you know, find the answer to a question they have.
Yeah. I love that point about, I've been given a lot of thought of like how community potentially could evolve. So I think that's a really interesting one to come back to in the future. And I think you're spot on about unbundling, like 100%, right? Like this has to be parsed. So I think like you're spot on there. I think it's going to squeeze the AI tool budget that we have carte blanche to buy right now, right? Because I think all these tools are kind of doing similar things. Their Venn diagrams are like kind of like just circles on top of each other at this point. So
yeah,
that will be squeezed once we get away from the like, ooh, AI, like moment of it, and like kind of come get grounded a little bit more around its uses and expenses and ROI. And I think clear ROI from AI will, I mean, it's already emerging, right? And I think it's going to be a stabilizing force. And kind of like bubble protection, right? It's like, let's make sure we've got the clear ROI, and like, you know, again, that 0 to 1 for AI versus like 1 to 2 for AI plus human, like that might be a model that we're looking at. And I think we're going to see growth of teams who understand customers, content and experience design, as well as technology, right? I think that we are asking, you know, I've seen a lot of folks in the engineering product design space having these conversations over the last week, like what is it specifically doing to the role of the product manager, right? What is it doing to engineers, and particularly like our developers, you know, front-end developers and all of that. And so I think for us, it's like, you know, an example of a team where you have, let's say in CX, like customer education, digital success, scale success, right? Like bringing this model together where you're doing the scaled stuff in the enterprise that's like, you know, just all digital, but now adding in some of that CS, I think that's going to eliminate some silos, and it's going to act as an incubator for any org trying to find the right engagement mix with customers. I think we've spent a lot of time saying like, okay, like you've got skilled teams like mine that are doing digital education, like content production, that kind of a thing, community, right? Like yours. And then you'll have skilled CS over here in the like CS monolith organization. And my question is like, does that make sense now in the world of AI? I don't think so. I think that you increasingly need to bring elements in and augment teams so that they're not just focused tunnel vision on one thing. They've got a full spread of things that they can command, control, and change with AI. It doesn't work without that. If you're not actually maneuvering AI and the human element together, you're not gonna use it to its advantage.
No, certainly not. And even what you're saying now makes me think a little bit. I don't know if this is a fully formed thought, but I'm gonna try to say it anyway. It's like after we come out of this, you know, this rush to acquire as many AI tools as possible, and we start thinking a little bit more about like AI assisted use cases and how we get outcome, like how we best use AI to accomplish defined outcomes. What it actually is going to do in some ways is it's going to force us to rethink roles and responsibilities, not just across CX, but frankly, even across our organizations, all up. And so one thing that it might start to force a lot more is these conversations about not just like which team owns which activities, which I think this is like the number one thing that I think like causes teams to lose credibility is when we're only talking about the activities that we're performing and we're like, oh, well, we own this, so we have to keep doing this. And then we're fighting about who does this. Well, it's not the activity that matters. It's the outcome that matters. Teams are going to increasingly be challenged to own like a portfolio of tactics to achieve certain outcomes, because it's no longer going to be that like so many of the things that we do across teams require the execution of the exact same activities over and over and over.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. And I think it is going to bring into question org charts. I think that people might be tempted to say that like, let's centralize everything here, or like this function owns this. I actually think ownership and centralization are going to go and get like much more decentralized because of this outcomes driven conversation, right? Like if teams are responsible for an outcome and truly are accountable for that outcome, right? And we like need to hold teams, including our own, accountable for like tangible outcome, then they should have like everything at their disposal to go and happen, right? Not at the expense of, again, creating like siloed org structures and that kind of a thing. And so you've got to have
Don't
ship the org chart, right? But like we've got to have some way in which like it is someone's responsibility to care about this thing all the time. And it has to be like a customer-centric outcome, right? Because otherwise we're going to optimize for business metrics to death. And then we're going to like forget about what allows us to have those business metrics at all, which is that overarching customer experience. So I do think a lot's about to be, rebuilt.
We'll definitely need to come back to this. I think like maybe this is like a future, not even CX episode, but an Etera episode, is like thinking about accountability and ownership. What are the business outcomes we need to drive? And what does this team wake up every day and think the most about?
Yeah.
Because that gives people focus. Like, I think that part of it is helpful. So maybe we'll have an Etera on ownership.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool.
All right. Well, I think we have drained AI for now.
For now.
But just like you said, Dee, the moment we release this episode, the moment it's going to go out of date. So we will certainly come back to this topic again, and we'll talk to a lot of people who are using AI in different and creative ways. So if you are using AI in your program in a cool way and you want to come on the show and talk about it, please reach out to us, find our LinkedIn page, CXetera. We've got CXetera.com. And while we would always appreciate a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because we're new and that's the number one thing that you can do to find a new baby little podcast like ours, what we really invite you to do is come on our LinkedIn page and have a conversation with us about the questions that we've asked today. How are you using AI? Do you think AI is coming to eat CX's lunch? Follow our page and join that conversation with us.
And thank you for listening. We're so happy you're here.
Me too. Thanks for listening.
I know.